Anthony Herron.
All we got to do is do our job and punch him in the mouth every single play.
Bears Monday with Big Ant.
One of the offensive linemen from Indiana just starts like kind of ramming my face in the ground, basically, in the midst of a pile of bodies. So I, with my dexterity that I have and the flexibility, I rear back while my face is in the ground, and I just kick him in the chest. So all the officials see is a big body, a big Hoosier body flying backwards, and my foot being the reason why.
He gave me some kind of Bruce Lee cross kick or something.
I kicked the out of him.
SiriusXM and Fox 32 football analyst.
They have no idea what goaded me into doing that, so I end up getting ejected from the game because I kicked this dude in the chest and he goes flying.
Oh, yeah! Look at you! You was popping all that good a second ago, then you got kicked in your chest!
Anthony Herron and Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Oh, it's been a minute since we've done that open. I love that open. Big Ant Herron is one of our guys. He's terrific. He's all over the place with doing high school stuff, college stuff, and pro stuff. He's terrific, and he joins me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. If you don't want to go out to Melrose Park, you can go to apford.com and check out the vehicles before you get there. This hour is being brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago, and now Big Ant is on the score. Hello, sir.
Lo ho, Home Springs Eternal in Chicago, man. Folks are feeling good. The drive went well. I've been talking about the word hope for weeks at this point, just kind of getting through the last, let's call it month plus. And as I've been just sort of dissecting, what's worthy of being hopeful about with the various sports teams in Chicago, what the springtime portion of the calendar during the year is all about. I got to admit, man, when I would reference the Bears just with the NFL draft approaching, part of it in my head was there's just a little bit of hesitation, let's call it, just where, you know, whether or not I could really be fully invested in the notion of convincing people, here's something to be hopeful about with the Bears, with the draft approaching. And then they pulled it off. They actually had a very successful draft weekend. And so it is nice to see. It is a good feeling to be back to a position, I would say for the first time in a little while, to be back in a position that nothing is guaranteed. We have no idea how any of these picks are going to be once they take the field for Chicago, but it feels like the draft went well. And when the draft goes well, hope springs eternal.
That's one of the things that I've been saying today, that I can't promise anyone how this is going to go with the players, but the process that the Bears got the players by, I was happy to see it. So let's start with numero uno, the first guy. Justin Fields, they trade up to get Justin Fields. What player did you see him be at Ohio State?
He was a force of nature for the Buckeyes. He was a guy who came in from Georgia immediately when he transferred to the Ohio State University. He was voted a captain right away when he showed up to campus. That is no small feat. Like you don't show up and get voted captain just because you're a quarterback with the Buckeyes. They got playing offensive linemen. They have turned into wide receiver university. They got a slew of talent all over the place, both sides of the ball. We know all the defensive linemen and linebackers all over the place. There's first round talent that abounds. The quarterback position is not necessarily where that first round talent has been historically for the Bucks. So, yeah, you got some five-star kid who apparently didn't pan out after a season at Georgia, transfer it in. That doesn't guarantee him being voted a captain, but he immediately made that impression on his teammates in Columbus, where before he had started a game, when he had only been on campus a few months and barely even practiced with them, here's Justin Fields being voted a captain by his teammates at Ohio State. And one of the things that someone who was very briefly his teammate in Columbus, Tate Martell, who was a five-star recruit as a quarterback in his own right, and just before the rumors of Justin Fields transferring in had begun to swirl, but it hadn't officially happened yet, when Ohio State was in the Rose Bowl, and Tate Martell actually made some comments about basically saying that even if Justin Fields were to transfer in, Ryan Day's playbook is so expansive that he didn't necessarily feel threatened right away by the notion of having a quarterback with Justin Fields' talents coming in, because of how difficult Ryan Day's playbook is to master. And so only after being in the Ryan Day playbook for a few weeks, he's the opening day starter for the Buckeyes. And after only being in the playbook for a few months, he's a Heisman Trophy finalist and leading that team to the college football playoff. So, if nothing else, before we get to any of the tangibles that are so tantalizing about Justin Fields, just that making that impression on his teammates and the consumption of a voluminous playbook in Columbus, who's one of the top offensive minds in the country, it just goes to show the immediacy of the impact he made on one of the great college football programs in America.
What are the Bears getting as far as tangibles go then with Justin Fields?
I mean, the exciting thing is that, and I've seen, you know, where there would be a few detractors about the Justin Fields pick because of the, let's call it the shrapnel from what everyone's been through and watching how the Mitch Trubisky era played out in Chicago. I do see some folks voicing some concern about whether or not it is going to be another Mitch Trubisky experience. But let's count his acumen as one of the tangibles of Justin Fields because of how next level he is mentally with the game. As an amateur in a college offense, but to be able to quickly master what was asked of him in the Ohio State offense, I don't have any doubts that he'll be able to come in and quickly consume the Bears' playbook. The other tangible end of it, the more physical end of it, is, of course, the rapid nature that he can evade defenders with both inside and out of the pocket. He's got some of the QB nuances down where he's got those very subtle movements in the pocket where he can shuffle in either direction. He can be on the move and still keep a passing temperament while he's on the move. And he also is, of course, with that 4.4 speed and an extremely combustible talent when you get him into open space. But he was also, from within the pocket, out of any of the top quarterbacks in this draft cycle, he was the most accurate passer on intermediate and deep throws. And that was really where Ohio State's offense made its hay. To me, I think I know you watched that national championship game between your Crimson Tide and the Buckeyes very closely, and you saw a juxtaposition between the two offensive systems where Mac Jones and that Steve Sarkisian offense, there were a lot more easy answers. There was a lot more using motion to quickly get receivers and running backs open. So whether it's Devontae Smith or Najee Harris, let's find a way to kind of quickly and cleverly get them one-on-one with a linebacker. And Mac Jones didn't necessarily have to scan the field. The Ohio State offense, I suppose much to the chagrin of folks who were claiming otherwise, it was very, very much called upon for Justin Fields within the pocket to actually have to read coverages, to actually have to hold the ball. And so I think that's part of where the misnomer of his supposed inability to read coverages. I did think in my evaluation, yes, I would have liked him to get through his progressions more quickly, and that certainly showed where he was most comfortable was the ability to have protection in the pocket, to scan from 1 to 2 to 3, and when there was protection, he could carve you up as well as anyone. When pressure got to him quickly, that became an issue. But there wasn't another quarterback in the draft that, when they had time in the pocket, could throw as accurately on the intermediate and the deep pass as Justin Fields. So as much as we haven't necessarily seen quarterbacks in the Bears offense, whether Mitch, Nick Foles, you name it, take advantage of a Darnell Mooney last season and some of the deep shots that were available to him, day one, Justin Fields will be the best deep ball passer the Bears have in that system.
We're talking with Big Ant Heron. He's one of our Bears analysts here on The Score. He also does a lot of work for Big Ten Radio on Sirius XM and covers college and pro and high school football like on a bunch of different platforms. How would you like to see the Bears go about giving Justin Fields his opportunity to play?
I think from what I've heard of the way Matt Nagy has been phrasing things so far, I think they've got the right idea. They've already invested in veteran quarterbacks to be within their system at the moment. So, you know, Nick Foles isn't going anywhere because they've guaranteed him money. Andy Dalton isn't going anywhere. They've guaranteed him money. So unless you can find some trade partner for one of them, frankly, both of them, you know, who cares? But when it comes down to it, at least one of them and likely both of them will be around. So I don't see any reason to force feed Justin Fields into the first unit huddle on day one. You've got veteran protection for him, essentially. So if you end up with a Patrick Mahomes scenario that plays out where you get a vet who's doing well enough, and it wouldn't shock me if Andy Dalton played well enough to win games as the Bears quarterback, and especially if we see a version of Matt Nagy that's kind of figured out what the personnel on his offense, as you and I have talked about in detail for a couple of seasons now, if we see a sort of refreshed version of Matt Nagy that's calling the offense in-game in a manner that best suits the overall infrastructure of the Bears, then you know what? Andy Dalton might be able to get by and play winning football. And I think that's fine for a season. But when it comes down to it, if it's proven in the meeting rooms, on the practice field, in preseason games, that Justin Fields is just the guy who gives them the best chance to win games, then yeah, put him in there. But I don't think that because you've invested so much already in veteran signal callers and guys who have made plays at the NFL level, I don't think they need to force feed Justin Fields day one.
What's your tape analysis of Tevin Jenkins and Larry Berome?
I love what I saw from Tevin Jenkins going into the draft. I think he was another very exciting draft pick. The release of Charles Leno does surprise me because I didn't necessarily think that they would as quickly be willing to give up a veteran presence as the other offensive tackle, and it would give you some versatility with how you could maybe play Tevin Jenkins as a right tackle, as a left tackle, and you know, have some versatility to the way you could try to use a young, talented offensive lineman. So it does speak to a youth movement for Chicago to say that not only are we going to draft a couple of tackles who are well-regarded, a very physical player in Tevin Jenkins, who is an underrated athlete, there's no doubt about that, but then also Larry Borum and what he brings to the table. I do think that both guys will have the potential to step in early, especially Jenkins. I think Tevin Jenkins is a guy that it wouldn't have surprised me, even with Leno here and Jermaine Fetty there, that he would have certainly had the potential or even the likelihood to beat one of them out. My expectation after the draft was that we would see Charles Leno at left tackle and Tevin Jenkins at right tackle. Seems like the Bears had other ideas. So, again, I do think if you're going to have Fetty and Jenkins out there, or, you know, Jenkins and Borum, or, you know, whatever it is, ends up being, I do think if you're going to have youth out there and you're not necessarily going to have people, you know, individuals on the edge holding it down for you, that you're confident can hold up and pass pro over and over again, the onus will again be on Matt Nagy. And that's where my focus will be, as much as the development of the techniques, the fundamentals of young football players who will very likely be thrust in the lineup early here coming off of this draft cycle. There's going to be a lot asked of them, especially with more limited mini camps and reps that are going to be diminished again. It's certainly plausible they'll step in and play fine, but how they're developed and how the offensive system is called, as we saw late in the season at quarterback and offensive line and running back, as Matt Nagy, frankly, was after he gave up play calling, but when the system was adjusted in the way that myself and a lot of others around town had sort of been speaking to for a couple of seasons, you saw the amount of pressure that it took off of the quarterback position to constantly read from within the pocket, the offensive line to have to make, you know, protection calls and to just pass pro from a stationary target over and over again, and especially to have balance to the way the plays are called with the run phase. All those things need to happen, and if they do, just like we saw with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you don't need a bunch of experience across the offensive line. You don't need guys who've been to a bunch of Pro Bowls at running back. You need guys who can just play winning football, and then you need the scheme to suit how you constantly maneuver the scheme to make sure the defense isn't getting a bead on any one thing.
I look at the next two picks, Herbert and Newsom, and I get kind of excited. And it's skill position players, but in watching both of them, I've seen both of them have like explosive plays and them running away from defenders, and I love that. And with Newsom, I've seen some contested catches with him too. Does this give you any idea of what Nagy's offense might look like in a couple of years and the types of things that he wants to do?
It certainly gives me a sense of what I hope the offense will look like, because, you know, what they added to the offense with Darnell Mooney, and my evaluation of Mooney through the draft cycle and as the Bears were initially getting him into the lineup. And again, last season, no preseason games, hardly any real minicamp reps. So we didn't necessarily know. We just knew Darnell Mooney was a fast guy who steps onto the field for the first game. And wow, this guy had – and I was talking to you about it immediately after that game in Detroit, the nuance to the way that Darnell Mooney could run and execute the entire route tree and how quiet his hands were for a guy who was thought of as more of a vertical target. I don't mind that deep ball speed, Daz Newsome adding that, I think that is outstanding. And now you have the potential to have multiple guys who can take the top off the defense, who can lengthen coverage for a guy like Allen Robinson, for some of the other weapons who could be there at tight end, at running back out of the backfield. There can be versatility to the Bears' offensive attack. in a way that, frankly, the weaponry hasn't really suited in the last couple of seasons. But then you go back to the discussion we were having about Justin Fields as a quarterback. As dependable, let's call it, as Andy Dalton has been throughout his career, and he's won a lot of games when he was in Cincinnati, he was never a guy that could consistently defeat you with the vertical pass. And with Justin Fields, it's not just about his arm strength that can get that done, because there's plenty of that. He's just flat out accurate with the deep ball, man. You watch the highlights from the Ohio State offense, and yes, they got some of the most talented receivers in America, but even when there was an immense separation, he had a knack for how to feed the ball to the back shoulder, how to deliver it over the top with touch and timing and accuracy. When he had protection, he was just one of the more gifted passers in the country on those deeper routes. And so the Bears are adding speed to their offense in a manner that, aside from Darnell Mooney, they just didn't have. Mooney was the only guy in the offense last season that could really force the defense to get out of their pedal, to open their hips, to turn and run, and then it turned into a Bears offense that, because they couldn't connect with Mooney, they had to use him as sort of the gadget guy out of the backfield as well, just to find a way to get the ball in his hand. Now you have multiple, you should have multiple receivers who force defenders to open their hips, and at whatever point Justin Fields enters the lineup, you should have a quarterback who can take advantage of those deep play opportunities that the Bears so frequently missed with Mooney last year.
Big Ant, as always, I appreciate the time and the education. Have a good time on your trip, and I will talk to you soon.
Loho, appreciate you, my friend.
That is Anthony Heron. You can follow him on Twitter at Big Ant Heron. Don't worry, we are not done talking about what's going on with the Bears and Justin Fields. Another person who covered the Big Ten is going to join me, Mike Hall of the Big Ten Network. The bonus of having Mike on the show is that he also has some White Sox angst. So we will do both of those things next here on the
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Come on.
You better say something I like to hear, Carlos. Carlos, you better say what I like to hear. Come on, Carlos. Let's go. You better say Justin Fields a match.
Come on.
Oh, he's a black quarterback. Yeah. By time we get us a real, you know what I'm saying? Let's go, man. Let's go, man.
Come on.
That was Eddie Jackson on Instagram. Trying not to slander too many people. Talking about our guy Carlos, who we had on the show earlier today, saying the pick of Justin Fields. Welcome in. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. Parkinson Spiegel will take over after I am done. My guy, Mike Hall, he texted me on Friday because he was having a blast listening to the show. And I was like, well, let's get you on the show on Monday because we genuinely like each other and like talking to one another. Plus, he also is like the main dude over at Big Ten Network. So he kind of knows a little something about Justin Fields. And he's one of the most famous Chicago White Sox fans. He will probably, when I do my top five of White Sox fans, he probably will be number 6. He joins me now on the Al Pamani Ford Hotline. Al Pamani Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. You can also just go to apford.com and check it out yourself. He is Mike Hall of the Big Ten Network. Hello, sir.
Here's the thing. All that was great, but you glossed over the fact that you were on fire Friday. You were so funny and so joyful about this. It was one of my favorite shows to listen to. I mean, not only because it was just great and entertaining, but like it totally captured exactly how I feel. Like, being a Bears fan is great and we love it, but we're also tired of being disappointed. And when they did something that was universally agreed upon as a great move, it was so fun to be joyful about this team that we love so much.
Yeah, and that was kind of the thing that I wanted to show on Friday's show. Like, there's going to be so much time for me to go into my bag of serious film breakdowns and to, you know what I mean? Like, there's going to be a lot of time for me to do that between now and when the first game is played. I thought Friday was a day for celebration, and quite honestly, I think that the celebration is continuing, because not only did they get the quarterback, I think that they've gone a long way to make their offensive line better. But it just felt like it was a little nicer on Friday, like the weather was cooperating, food tasted better, drinks were better. Bears fans were in a good place, so why not live in that good place for a little while?
I know. It really was. I was texting family members who are Bears fan, and I was like, you know, it feels like even when we have nice things, you know, like a 13-3 season or something, we get disappointed and we can't handle it. So to have something where there was no foreseeable downside. I mean, listen, we all know that half of first rounders fail, right? So there's no guarantee he's actually going to be great, but like all the check marks of thing that you want to see in a highly regarded draft pick, like, they're all there. Talent, versatility, fighting through pain, leadership, brains, like, he's got it all. And it's really exciting that the one position that has eluded us in our team for so long, it looks like they really got a shot to potentially have solved that.
Mike Hall of the Big Ten Network is joining me here on The Score. He's also on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. Okay, so take me back to the moment that you find out that Justin Fields is transferring to Ohio State and what it's been like covering him as the quarterback of Ohio State.
So I remember I've been doing our signing day shows for, I don't know, a decade or something on the Big Ten Network. And I remember that year when he went to Georgia, it was like a dead heat. Who's the best quarterback in this class? Some guy named Trevor Lawrence or some guy named Justin Fields. I mean, they were neck and neck from way back when. And he goes to Georgia, and I think Jake Fromm was ahead of him, and there was no chance that he was going to get playing time, so they find out he's transferring. And it was like, it was a big deal, because you knew, again, sort of like a draft pick, a hotshot high schooler doesn't mean you're going to be a great college player, but everything you want was lined up there. They had a possible opening for him to get the job right away. He pretty quickly earned it, and you thought, you know, there have been a handful of great Ohio State quarterbacks the last decade that, by the way, none of them, for what it's worth, have been great pros, but they were really, really good in college. And you sort of thought he has all the intangibles to be that next great Urban Meyer, now Ryan Day, quarterback in Columbus. And, I mean, man, he pretty much fit the bill from day one. I mean, he didn't lose a single Big Ten game in his 2 years as starter. And the only two losses he had were in the national championship and in the playoff. I mean, he was a winner. He really looked the part too. Like, he looks like an athlete. He's got a cannon for an arm. He can evade pressure. I mean, he's got everything.
Am I making too much of the way he played in the Clemson game? Because, and here's why I bring it up, because I looked at that and I said, here's a guy who didn't need to play at that point. Like, they were in control of that game, didn't need to play, felt it was important to come back out there hurt, and then delivers a dime while he's dying because his hip is killing him.
I know. I mean, that's the thing. You look at the most high-profile games he played in college, he was fighting through something. And not in like, I don't think we have to be worried about his health. In like, it showed a lot about his grit and his toughness that, you know, I think it was the Michigan game that year he first got the injury, and he was out like 90 seconds of game time or something because he fought his way back in, and he was telling his staff, like, you have to put a brace on me so I can go in. And then this past year when he played, he got crunched in the ribs, and it was clear he was absolutely a wounded soldier, and he somehow came in. And like you said, it wasn't just like he was in as sort of like a Pippen in 98 game six decoy, you know, like he was actually throwing the ball. These were not 2 yard outs and he was handing it off. He was actually heaving the ball. So when I think of those things, like I remember go back to his first year, I might be a little off of the numbers, but it was something like He had 41 touchdown passes and three picks in the entire year. But two of those picks came against Clemson. And so if you were trying to be negative, you'd be like, well, he had his worst game against his toughest team. And it was like, yeah, but he also threw for 300 yards in that game and was injured, wasn't close to 100% in that game. So when I look at that stuff, all it does is impress me. It doesn't make me see the negatives. It makes me see the big-time positives.
What can we expect from season two of On the Bench? When are we doing that? Let's go.
You're kind to bring that up. That was fun, man. It was you were good to help me out throughout that process. But that was a fun, you know, you do the multiple types of interviews, and a lot of them are like this where it's 10, 12, 15 minutes. But then with your pod, you've been able to do these hour-long ones. And that was my first chance to do them. And it was really fun. I focused a lot on Big Ten people, obviously, being at the Big Ten Network. And I want to do that again next year. But I think I'm going to try to branch out a little more towards the entertainment stuff. Try to have on some of the people who are Big Ten fans or grads but might be an actor or a comedian or are tangentially related to the league.
All right. I like that idea. That makes a lot of sense. You should look for the On the Bench podcast with Mike Hall, wherever it is that you get your podcast. You know I can't let you go without us talking about the White Sox, right?
Okay.
I mean, we get the joy of what's going on with the Bears, and then yesterday we're both sitting there watching Luis Robert writhe in pain on the field.
Yeah.
And I just want to know, like, where are you right now? Like, as a White Sox fan, are you, what's your threat level right now?
I feel like I'm in a better spot than you are, I think.
Yes.
Like, I'm not thrilled. I thought they'd be a little better. So my main concerns, obviously, are the injuries. You know, our two superstar outfielders are out for who knows how long, and that's a problem. But I think we have the best starters ERA in the league, which makes me feel good. We are scoring runs,
yep,
which makes me feel good. I don't know if it's so early. I don't want to hammer too hard on Tony La Russa, but he does feel maybe rusty is the word I would use. I feel like he's not quite – I'm choosing to think that he's just rusty and you know, he's going to get back in the swing of things. But if you told me we weren't with some of our best guys and we got, you know, a no-hitter already and we are in second place and are above 500, and when I consider that when they were having the discussions with the Players Association in the league, and the league said we wouldn't really start until this past weekend, and I'm thinking, you know, this is what we did with that month. It's not a huge disappointment to me. Tell me where I'm wrong.
No, and I'm going to surprise you with a little bit of optimism when it comes to the White Sox. Although this optimism could also be interpreted as expectation. Okay, so you lose Aloy. That's a big part of your offense. You know he's gone for probably the entire year. You lose Robert. You know he's going on IL, but we don't know the extent of his injury as of yet. We should find out something a little bit later on today. I look at it as you still have an MVP and two other MVP candidates in Tim Anderson and Yoan Moncada, guys that got MVP votes. You have two Cy Young candidates from last year in your rotation, and both of those guys are fine. That alone should be enough for you to withstand even the horror of not having one of your best RBI producers, one of your best hitters, and the guy that is an amazing fielder and a menace on the bases and was becoming a better hitter. With them bringing in Lynn, you should be able to withstand this. And yes, I'm surprised that I'm saying it too, but I don't want there to be any excuses for this team. Like, this team was built to win. And even with the injuries, and the injuries are a big deal, I'm still left with a bunch of great players. So hopefully Jose Abreu can start playing great again, because I think that would make a hell of a lot of people feel more and more comfortable.
I agree with that. And I think in the macro, you're right. Like, especially when you make the trade for Lynn, like, we're not in the, we can't be as a team in the mindset of like, hey, let's try to be above 500. Like, this is a win year. This is no longer, rebuild is over. It's show the results. I think that is a fair criticism for the first 5 weeks of play, for sure.
So hopefully we'll see them be better overall. But you're right. They're scoring runs. I think they're leading the American League in runs per game. I'd like to see a more consistent lineup with the younger guys in the lineup. And I need to find out what the hell is going on with Yermin. Like, that was weird yesterday that he was late and not in the lineup. And you add that to the thing earlier in the season where they didn't like his body language and they pulled him out of a game. Like, I want some of that stuff, like, fixed. And I got my fingers crossed on Robert, and hopefully he's just gone for a little while and not for a long while. Because Adam, we can't find Adam Engel, although he was at the ballpark yesterday. He was taking batting practice, so that's good. But now you need Adam Engel to platoon with Adam Eaton, but you're going to also need Adam Engel to now play center field for a while.
Well, isn't on the sort of the big picture on Yermin, like forget the little bit of drama that we've seen. The way he's produced, I'm trying to think of a time where like I was this surprised. Like, remember when Esteban Loaiza started the All-Star game and like nobody saw that coming? I sort of, that's like the closest thing I can think of to where I was like, how did this happen? How is, with all these uber prospects we have that are all, you know, between 19 and 23, he has been this absolute wonderful burst of production offensively, which I certainly never saw coming.
I didn't see it happening either, and it's been a lot of fun, and I hope, like, Herbie and I have been talking about, hey, when are we going to do that show of the, oh, man, that's too bad, what's going on with Yermin? Like, we've been joking about that, like, when is that happening? And then Shane Bieber happened to him, and it's been bad. Like, his last 10 at-bats have been bad, so hopefully he can get to the ballpark on time and work on some things and be and have his own burger and have everything be wonderful and great again.
You got time for one more thing, by the way?
Sure, for you all the time.
I know we're both friends with him, but are you kidding me? Benetti and Stone, are they not unbelievable this year? Like, they've been good. They were one of those guys that had pretty quick chemistry right away. Stone's been unbelievable for forever. Benetti's been great as long as he's been doing this. But, like, goodness, this year, they are absolutely the most delightful listen.
It is like a well-oiled act that you take on the road between those two now when they're doing. Like, it's like an Abbott and Costello. Like, they're just touring around the nation, just giving you baseball and one-liners, and it's fantastic.
It's so good. They're like a vaudeville act, and we get to watch them call our games every day.
It's pretty awesome. Mike Hall, I appreciate you as always. Thank you so much for being on the show and talking about Justin Fields and the White Sox, sir.
You're the goods, buddy.
That is Mike Hall. He's terrific. At BTN, Mike Hall, you can follow him on Twitter. He's such a good dude. He loves the White Sox. And I didn't know that his Bears thing was that strong. I knew the Bulls and the White Sox thing was strong with him. I didn't know the Bears thing was that strong. And it was really cool to hear him mark out a little bit and talk about how good this was for the Bears with them drafting Justin Fields. Yeah, real quick on the White Sox. Let me throw a couple numbers at you on Jose Abreu. Jose Abreu on the struggle bus for real. Okay, slash line, 202-302-374. It's a 676 OPS. His K rate is up 28.4%, which is the highest of his career. His ISO is 172, which is the lowest of his career. Now, there is some BABIP in there. He's a 238 BABIP this year. He's got a hit, especially now. But if you're stuck, if at the end of all of this, like, you don't have Aloy, you might not have Robert for a little while, you still have an MVP. You have Tim Anderson, who got MVP votes last year. You have Yoan Moncada, who got MVP votes the year before. You have two guys that finished in the top 10 for Cy Young last year. and you made a move to bolster your starting rotation. I'm not saying that it doesn't matter that Aloy and Luis Robert are hurt. Obviously it does. But this is the best situation that I've seen the White Sox have to absorb something like this, which means, though, they've got to win some games in the margin. You can't have some of these games that they don't win because of silliness and bad lineups and not pinch hitting in the right. Like, Tony's got to win them some games now because of the situation that they're in. I'm looking forward to seeing this week of games with the White Sox because I think it's really, really – and next week is going to be a meat grinder for them too. We're going to take a break. I haven't talked about the Cubs. I mean, because they're in last place. It's like they're in last place. The Cardinals have won four in a row. Things are really bad right now. That guy right there in particular, I want to talk about him next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Now KB having another really good ball game with a double and a home run.
Hits that one deep to left. Malley with the head down because he knows it is gone. Second home run of the day for Chris Bryant. He is 3-for-3. 6-5 Reds as KB pulls the Cubs closer at the Great American Ballpark.
Spiegs on the call yesterday. With Spiegs on the call, that meant someone had to host Hit and Run. This is the Locked On Sox guys, Herbie and Tanny.
Fam,
they're so famous. The Cubs lost a wild game in Cincinnati yesterday. It was crazy, and Nicholas Castellanos had his fingerprints all over that loss. I wonder why they didn't walk him. I would have probably walked the bases loaded. Anyway, I'll talk with Rossi about that at some point. Chris Bryant, you know how I feel about the Chris Bryant slander. Chris Bryant is having himself a month. Here's his slash. 323, 405, 708. He's got 9 home runs, 22 RBIs, 13 walks. His OPS is 1114. He is 6th in Major League Baseball, tied with Vlad Guerrero in OPS. He is 3rd in offensive war at 1.8 behind Mike Trout and a couple, and one other who's at 2.1. He is 4th in slugging at 708. He is tied for the lead in doubles. He is tied for the lead in home runs. He is 4th in RBIs. He is a healthy Chris Bryant, and he is on a tear. And as I'm watching him, I'm like, get your money, KB. Get your money. Herbie brought it up during the break, and I don't think that's a terrible point. I'm also watching Nicholas Castellanos going, he would have been a really good fit on either side of town for the Cubs to keep him or the White Sox to pursue him. That guy is having a crazy year. We'll see if it ends up meaning anything for the Reds. And I guess we'll probably see if it means anything for the Cubs that Chris Bryant is back to MVP form and they still can't win games. I'll talk with Parkinson Spiegel about that and Justin Fields and more next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.